Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The 1952 Rosebud blizzard and the flood that followed created conditions as dangerous as any storm in South Dakota history. As we're enduring another winter many of us would like to forget, South Dakota writer Paul Higbee details Rosebud's demon in the March-April edition of South Dakota Magazine. As another demon storm has descended upon us, we welcome Paul Higbee to hear more about the 1952 blizzard and the writing project that came out of it. Paul joins us on the phone. Paul, thanks for returning. Nice to have you back.
Yeah, always good to be on your show, Lori.
Seems like a particularly good day to talk about monstrous storms. So tell me where you first sort of, heard about this 1952 storm and decided to start researching it for the magazine.
Well, I had heard about Laura Hellman, who documented it so well. Within a couple weeks of the blizzard, she asked people in South Central South Dakota to tell their stories. She was doing, in 1952, very much a people's history, and people responded, including people who had lost family members. And they're just recounting this, really 2 or 3 weeks after it happened. So I had to look up her writing, and she wrote a book that I was able to locate, and just incredible, as I said, people's history.
Tell me a little bit about her. Who is she? That's something. Is she a journalist? Is she a librarian? Where does she kind of, the immediate and foresight to start gathering the stories so quickly?
Laura was a journalist. She was a correspondent for the Mitchell paper and the Winter paper. She had come to South Dakota as a young woman, I think about 1919, as a teacher from Nebraska. She married a rancher, Walter Hellman, and she was just active in everything in her community, church, 4-H, and then she started writing articles for the newspapers. She eventually was on the State Board of Education. She really believed in history instruction, and so she was somebody people took very seriously when she called up and said, "Hey, I need you to write me something." They were honored to jump to it.
Let's talk about the storm. And how widespread was it in the region?
Well, it came only 3 years after the blizzard of 49, which was massive across the Great Plains and into the Rocky Mountain West. This was much more localized. It was really just a strip where it was its worst, was a strip up the center of South Dakota, Nebraska to North Dakota. The rest of the state, as far as west as the Black Hills and Sioux Falls, it got some snow, but the real blizzard, the real winds were just up the middle of the state. And that's why it's usually called the Rosebud Blizzard, because that was sort of the epicenter around Mission and the whole Rosebud Reservation.
And put this in context, 1952, South Dakota. What is, what is travel like normally? What is electricity and, heating and, phone cover? Like, sort of bring us to the technological history of the context of this time. So when this blizzard hits, what are some of those major challenges that we might take for granted today? Some haven't changed, but some have.
Well, I think one of the things that was different was cars were not sealed like they are now. And I've been traveling all over the state the last 4 weeks. I've been in some pretty bitterly cold, windy weather conditions, but I don't have to fear that my engine block is going to get filled up with snow and just stop. I don't fear having snow come in to the passenger compartment of my car. And if you look at the fatalities in 1952, a lot of them were people in vehicles that just all of a sudden stopped running. And then they froze to death. Another thing that was different in 1952 in South Central South Dakota, a lot of people did not have telephones yet. And in fact, a lot of one-room schools were not connected by telephone. And people I talked to in that part of the state researching this article said, yeah, it was that blizzard of 52 that made my family decide that we were going to have a telephone.
Yeah.
So for communication, a lot of times people actually relied on radio stations. They'd find a public phone and call KGFX in Pierre or WNAX and say, say we don't know where our kids are or where our parents are. Could you put them on a list of missing and read it, and we'll see if somebody can help them be located.
All right, so talk a little bit about WNAX, and let's get into some of these really compelling stories of the lives that were lost and the concerns over livestock and people hunkered down in places, children. Let's start with the radio station. What kind of work were they doing, and what were some of the stories that were being told and broadcast at that time?
Well, I think everybody in agriculture knew WNAX as their station, where they got ag news and other kinds of news. And it seems like nobody had any idea this storm was coming until around noon, the day it hit, and WNAX said, well, you better get your kids to safety. And also warned ranchers, something's coming in and they better look after their livestock. And so people just kind of dropped everything that they were doing and hunkered down for this storm. And it hit in a way nobody could have expected. They saw black clouds coming from the west. And then within minutes, they described the snow as a wall of snow that you couldn't see into. They'd walk into it and be disoriented instantly. And, of course, everybody, it was the middle of a school day, and it's like, well, we don't want our kids trying to walk home in this. And, that was a lesson that really South Dakota educators had learned before statehood, the blizzard of 88. If you get one of these monster storms, don't let kids walk home. And so the teachers instantly knew when they looked out and saw this storm, this is one of those storms you don't let the kids walk home in. And so they knew within an hour that they were definitely going to be in that schoolhouse overnight and maybe for several nights. So the kids who died in this storm actually were kids who were picked up by family members in vehicles. And, as I mentioned earlier, the vehicle stalled.
You do.
So they died with their families.
Right. We're talking with Paul Higbee, and we're talking about this article in the current issue of South Dakota Magazine about the 1952, what was known as the Rosebud Blizzard. And, Paul, you do such a masterful job in the writing of this, of sort of laying out this idea that on one hand you had these people who were, freezing and dying in their families, fighting for their lives, and on the other hand you had the sort of, moments of celebration of, hey, it's a sleepover at the school and there's going to be some dancing. And like any storm, that we kind of recognize that today, that there's a sense of excitement in moments and then there's a sense of great loss in others. Tell us a little. Yeah, go ahead.
The teachers knew that, they had to keep the kids calm. And so they turned their schools into a party setting. And one woman had a phonograph, and the kids danced all night. There were games, and it was a big party for the kids. But all the teachers said later that what terrified them was that they were going to run out of fuel. These were little school buildings that were heated by fuel oil or coal, and they were just terrified that it would still be the storm would be raging, and they'd be out of fuel and people could die actually within the school. It didn't happen anywhere. It blew through in about 36 hours. And so they were okay on their fuel supplies.
What kind of livestock loss was there? What was the economic impact of the blizzard?
Well, there were a lot of livestock producers who lost half or even 75% of their sheep and cattle. So it was, it was massive economic loss.
And what was that from? Did they freeze? Did they suffocate? Did they get buried? Why was the loss so large?
Most ranchers said that they think they suffocated. It was a real powdery, wet snow, powdery and yet wet, and it would freeze the eyes shut, and then get into the nostrils of the animals and suffocate them.
Yeah.
again, very much like the blizzard of 88. It was, ranchers said it was the worst kind of snow to face. It just killed animals very, very quickly.
Tell us the story of this 8-year-old girl who kind of has a pretty epic experience during the storm that everybody's very worried about.
Yeah, WNAX kept broadcasting. They needed help finding Lana Seidenberg, who was 8 years old. Her parents were stranded in Gregory. Their home was in Dallas, so not very far away, but they had gone to her funeral in Gregory and couldn't get home, and knew that there were neighbors who were probably going to drop her off after school, not knowing that the parents were out of town. And that's exactly what happened. And Lana got into the house and took care of herself overnight. The parents didn't know if she was able to even get in the house, in fact. But she did. And then the next morning, she walked to a friend's house who was a mile and a half away and survived the walk. by then, the blizzard was subsiding somewhat, but it was still a bad storm. But she survived. And she kind of, in a way, became the symbol of the storm because everybody was so worried about this little 8-year-old girl. Where was she? You know, was there anything they could do? And she survived on her own, pretty much.
All right, let's talk about flooding, because there are implications of what happens after the storm that, kind of resonate. What is the flooding like after the blizzard of 52?
Well, it was just huge. It just flooded the whole course of the Missouri River through South Dakota. The worst was in Pier and Fort Pier. Pier almost lost its water system, its electrical system. Some people say in Fort Pier it was the highest water ever recorded in the city's history, about 9 feet over flood level. And then a lot of farmland, bottomland, just ruined by this mud that people said when it dried, it was like cement. And that probably attracted more national attention than the blizzard did. President Truman flew over and observed the area, and he said, "You know, we got to hurry up and get those dams on the Missouri finished, so we don't deal with this year after year." I talked to people about the 52 flood, and there were so many Missouri River floods in those years. Right before the dams were constructed, that they just kind of blur together for people. But it was bad. It was one of the very worst floods ever in the Missouri River.
You've done so much research, throughout your career for South Dakota Magazine and beyond. As you looked into this story, what were some of the, there's certain themes about who we are as a people that sort of rise to the top for you. What might some of those be?
Well, you know, it's funny. To me, the most intriguing thing of the whole event was Laura Hellman believing that we couldn't forget it. You know, we need to remember it, and we needed to remember it from many different perspectives. And so, you know, she went out there and convinced all these amateur writers that, when these things happen, let's remember them. Let's be ready. Let's not be caught unaware the next time these conditions develop. I keep coming back to her and what a great job she did in getting people to remember.
Do you think there was an impact to that? Do you think that collecting that kind of information did help people make different decisions next time, or help, I know I'm just reading the article and I'm like, oh, okay, you need to take this current storm very, very seriously.
Yeah, I that's what people kept telling me on the road the last 4 weeks. They said, we think we live in an age where these things probably won't happen again because we have better heating, better communications, we have cell phones, better vehicles. But they said, sometimes when you step out into a wind and the wind chill is 30 below zero, you realize we're not as protected as we think. You know, it can happen again, and so yeah, we need to remember.
Paul Higbee, anything else you're working on in the future before we let you go? What's fascinating you right now about the state that you'd like to know more about?
I'm writing the official 100-year history of the Black Hills Roundup Rodeo right
now.
Oh,
wow.
That's what I'm working on today. So I'm talking to a lot of rodeo cowboys and cowgirls, and this July 4th is the 100th anniversary of that great event.
I did not know that. That's going to be, must be fascinating research.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Paul Higbee, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.